Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, in for Marty Musk-Cohen. Philadelphia is one of 14 cities and counties around the country where scientists and concerned neighbors are gathering data on temperatures and, in some cases, air quality. They'll use it to identify urban heat islands, neighborhoods that swelter because of too few trees and too much asphalt. In some parts of the city, temperatures can register double digits hotter than other areas just a few miles away. Trees can make a world of difference, so the push is on to green up and cool down Philadelphia's hottest neighborhoods. This hour, we explore how our experience of extreme heat is impacted by our zip code and what's being done to promote environmental justice in urban heat islands here and around the country. We begin, though, with a report from WHYY's Sophia Schmidt of Plan Philly. She went along for the ride with a couple of citizen scientists recently on their quest to find out just how hot it gets in some of Philly's neighborhoods.
It's 6 a.m. on a Saturday, and I get in the back seat of a shiny black SUV.
Just need to put your seatbelt on. Safety.
Sounds good. Carolyn Martin is at the wheel, and her neighbor from West Oak Lane, Weymouth Cargill, is navigating, using step-by-step instructions on a piece of paper, kind of like a treasure map.
Wait a minute. Dolphin's got to be this way, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess we made the right turn. This is fun.
We're navigating old school because we're following a specific path through North and Northwest Philly for a community science project. As we drive, white sensors attached to our window measure the temperature and humidity every second. They also record the concentration of small particles that can affect your lungs and heart.
And what we're doing basically is driving through, and the apparatuses are detecting that flow.
Philadelphia is one of 14 cities and counties across the country chosen by the federal government to collect heat data this summer in an annual citizen science project. Philly's one of just two cities also measuring air quality. The information will be used to map urban heat islands, or areas of cities that get much hotter than places with more shade and less concrete. The ultimate goal is to inform solutions that will keep communities safe. Driving through North Philly, Cargill takes photos to go along with the data.
Just getting an idea as to where we are at trees versus concrete, because there's not a lot of trees.
Drexel University's Academy of Natural Sciences is leading the project locally. Richard Johnson is their director of community learning.
We're going to take the stories that we collected and all the thousands and thousands of pieces of information and measurements that we got that day, and then use that to make better informed decisions in the city about how to address heat and air quality issues, especially in the communities that are experiencing a disproportionate amount of those issues.
50 participants drove around gathering data through about 70% of the city. They focused on the hottest neighborhoods and the ones where residents are the most vulnerable to heat. Right now, the city uses land surface temperatures to map neighborhoods' exposure to heat. But the new data gathered this weekend measures the temperature of the air plus humidity, so it'll reflect what the heat actually feels like. Ivana Gonzalez also helped gather data.
We hope that it proves what we've always known, which is that our neighborhood is hot and that there's very little relief because there is a lack of shade.
Gonzalez works at a nonprofit called Esperanza in Philly's Hunting Park neighborhood. The organization also has a stationary sensor at its headquarters that measures temperature, humidity, and air quality. Gonzalez hopes this data can help attract money to fund solutions like planting trees and replacing dark roofing material and hot black asphalt with materials that reflect heat.
It'll help us to prove that we need to fund those things more, as well as hopefully inspire new solutions to these problems that we already know about.
Back in the car with the neighbors from West Oak Lane, we drive down Carolyn Martin Street. She shows me the cherry tree on her sidewalk. She calls it her baby.
When the sun rays are really, really hot, like in between like 1 and 4, I don't feel that effect because the tree that I have, the heat doesn't penetrate that much into my home.
Her neighbor, Weymouth Cargill, hopes the data we gathered will back up the need for more trees like this one.
And if we can provide data to make our community more livable, by all means, let's get it done.
The heat island maps that come out of this data will likely be finished this fall. Sophia Schmidt, WHYY News.
And thanks to Sophia for her reporting on this issue. Sophia Schmidt covers the environment for Plan Philly. Joining us now to discuss Sophia's report and much more are Erica Smith Fitchman, Community Forestry Manager at the Philadelphia Department of Parks and Recreation. She is the project lead for the Philly Tree Plan, which aims to increase the city's tree cover by 30% in 30 years. Erica, welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
And also with us is Ivana Gonzalez. You heard her voice just moments ago in Sophia's report. She is Community Outreach Associate at Esperanza, where she is in charge of the Green Initiative. Ivana, welcome.
Thank you.
And joining us virtually is Kurt Schickman, Director of Extreme Heat Initiatives at the Adrian Arsht Rockefeller Foundation Resilience Center, based in Washington, D.C. Kurt Schickman, welcome to Radio Times.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, Ivana, I will begin with you. We only have about a minute before we have to take a break, but you helped, obviously, to gather some of the data for the project that Sophia reported on. What do we know so far about the literal hot spots in the city of Philadelphia? Where are they?
Well, the hot spots in the city are Hunting Park, which is where Esperanza is housed, Point Breeze, Strawberry Mansion, and Cobbs Creek. Those are the heat islands in our city.
Yeah. I was stunned when I read that some of those neighborhoods can register up to 22 degrees hotter.
Yes.
The neighborhoods a few miles away.
Mm-hmm. It's really unfortunate. And it's because of the things that I just said and what we know. Erica and I and all of our friends all over the place, PHS, Tree Philly, we need trees. We need shade. We need a lot less exposure of those surfaces that hold heat in and then release it at night, which is typically when we'd experience cooling.
Right. And then you've got all the asphalt. You've got the black rooftops. You've
exactly.
got sort of this perfect combination of things that combine to make it so much hotter. And in the kind of weather that we're experiencing now, it's just off the charts.
Yeah. It's compounding all of these factors that we're seeing and just manifesting into really hot summers and really unbearable experiences for our community members.
Yeah. Erica, we know that part of the reason that we have these urban heat islands is because, as Ivana just pointed out, the lack of trees. Can you talk about what the tree disparity is like between a neighborhood like, let's say, Strawberry Mansion and Society Hill?
Yeah, there are extreme differences in the ways in where trees are in the city. There are some neighborhoods that are maybe 3% coverage. That means that if you're walking down the street and you look up, you're really not going to see very many branches and leaves of the trees. 3% cover is very, very low. And then some other neighborhoods have up to 40% or more, especially those around our larger parks in the city. Yeah. So it's a really huge disparity. The tree canopy is not equitably distributed across the city.
Yeah. Kurt Schickman, I want to go to you because your work involves helping cities to prepare for extreme heat. What does that look like in practice?
Well, it's a lot of what has just been mentioned. So it's really getting to scale a lot of these solutions, more trees, more reflective surfaces that don't trap the heat. But it's also things around preparation for these extreme heat events, which we all know are becoming more frequent and more intense in many of our cities, including Philly. And so it's helping to prepare the population and raise awareness amongst the population of what they can do to survive the heat that's coming in the next week, let's say, and also scaling and accelerating that transformation to the types of cities we need for the future to make them more thermally comfortable and places that we can learn and thrive in.
Yeah. Erica, as Sophia reported, Philadelphia is one of 14 locations around the country where this kind of heat data is being measured, but it's one of only two, I believe, where air quality is also being measured. Can you talk about why that's important and how it helps people like you decide which neighborhoods are the most vulnerable?
Yeah, air quality and the associated public health problems like high asthma are a huge part of why certain neighborhoods are more vulnerable to a lack of tree cover. Trees actually capture particulates in the air and can help clean the air. And with our Philly Tree Plan effort, we used a lot of these variables we've been talking about. Impervious surface, that means surfaces that water cannot penetrate into. High heat, asthma, poor air quality, to determine which areas of the city are the most vulnerable. And those are the areas that we have focused on to make sure that those people have a say in what the Philly Tree Plan is and the solutions that it recommends. And those are areas that we focus our data on for implementation as well, so we know how what it's going to take to increase tree canopy to a place where it's going to make an impact on the residents.
And you mentioned particulates. What does that mean?
Particulates are tiny pieces of dirt, dust, things that our daily lives just put out into the air that make the air unhealthy for us, contribute to public health problems.
Yeah. Ivana, Erica just talked about people in the neighborhood having a say in what happens there. And there is more and more talk about environmental justice. We've been talking about racial justice, social justice. There is talk about environmental justice as well. Can you explain a little bit more about that?
Yeah, well, we're finding more and more that environmental justice, racial and social justice are kind of the same thing. They're so intrinsically tied that when you talk about one, it'd be doing a disservice not to talk about all of them. We've found that our neighborhoods, like I said, compound factors because of, you know, decades and generations of disinvestment. And so it's all about, like I said, bringing those dollars in to sort of combat all of the things that we know are happening there. And so we've found that our neighborhoods are more likely to be hot because there's just more industrial space, there's more exposure to those surfaces that hold the heat. And so it's all about combating that.
There's also this idea of green gentrification and this concern that as the neighborhood improves and we get more trees and things get better, that people get pushed out. How does that work? Can you unpack that?
Yes, thank you so much for mentioning that, because it's something that we don't often think about. But this is a sort of what I like to call community trauma. So it's generations of people who have seen time and time again that when something is getting changed for the better in their neighborhoods, it's often not for them to enjoy. So it's for another person to enjoy who maybe makes more money, who maybe looks different than them, and who can pay maybe higher taxes. And so it's just one of those things where while people may want improvements in their neighborhoods, they may love trees, they may want one for themselves, but they know that sometimes if they pursue these interests, if they let others know that they have it and they start to receive them, will I be able to enjoy it years down the line, or will I be priced out? So it's just one of those things that we have to think about. It's one of those reassurances that we have to give when we're educating our people in the neighborhoods and trying to convince them of the necessity of these, you know, measures.
Yeah. Kurt Schickman, in our 30 seconds or so before the break, is that bearing out in what you're seeing as well in the work that you're doing?
Absolutely. I mean, and in many ways, the heat issue further exacerbates this idea around environmental justice, because heat is an insidious challenge. It affects so many different aspects of our lives. Pretty much every urban system, every human system is negatively affected by rising temperatures, and often not in ways that are readily visible. So they're exacerbating many of these existing racist policies, marginalization, and so on. So it affects in so many different ways, from the womb through school all the way through till the end of life. So it's a huge
issue. I'm going to ask you to hold that thought for just a moment. I have to take a quick break here, but we'll pick that up when we come right back. Stay with us.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moscowane. We are talking about urban heat islands. If that term is unfamiliar to you, it refers to parts of a city where temperatures are significantly higher than other areas. And usually, it's because those areas have few trees, lots of asphalt, black rooftops, and all of the ingredients that make for a hotter environment. And in fact, in the city of Philadelphia, there is data that tells us that some neighborhoods can register up to 22 degrees hotter than other neighborhoods that are just a few miles away, and that is largely because of the lack of tree cover. So we are talking about the efforts that are underway here in Philadelphia, but also around the country, To address these urban heat islands and to find ways to cool down some of the hottest neighborhoods, our guests this hour are Ivana Gonzalez. She is the Community Outreach Coordinator at Esperanza, in charge of their Green Initiative. Also with us is Erica Smith-Fitchman, who is Community Forestry Manager at Philadelphia Parks and Rec and Project Lead of the Philly Tree Plan. Also with us is Kurt Schickman, who is director of the Extreme Heat Initiatives at the Adrian Arsht Rockefeller Foundation Resilience Center. Let me invite our listeners to join us in the conversation. You can email us at radiotimes@whyy.org, tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and of course you can always pick up the phone and call us at 888-477-9499. Before we move on, Kurt Schickman, I'm sorry I had to interrupt you just before the break, but we were talking about the whole idea of environmental justice, and you were saying that what Ivana talked about a few minutes ago is exactly what you're seeing in your work as well.
Absolutely. And I guess the one last point I'd make is that it even gets into how we gather this data, which is why I think the program that Philadelphia is doing with NOAA, the Heat Watch program, is the start of a very important thing, which is making sure we understand that when we get data from a weather station, that weather station is almost never located in the places that are the hottest. So when we're calling warnings, when we're starting to raise awareness around heat in a particular city, coming up to a heat wave, we may not be talking about the temperatures that people in the most vulnerable and risk-exposed places are actually experiencing. And it goes, I think, even further when you talked at the top about zip codes and the difference between zip codes in terms of the heat impact. It's actually by house. So, you know, if it's a 95-degree day where I live in Washington, I may not have as much of a challenge with that because I live in a house with air conditioning. My neighbor doesn't have air conditioning or can't run it because it's too expensive. So even within one neighborhood, you could see vastly different human health responses. And I think we have to really think about that, both in terms of our policy, but really in terms of how we engage with our own community and making sure people are healthy. And so that's, I think, a really important aspect of this inequity that's out there. It isn't just in the physical aspects of it. It's actually in the data we gather to make our decisions around what we do.
Well, so Ivana Kurchis mentioned air conditioning and taking steps to help communities, and that was certainly part of what's been done in Hunting Park.
Yes.
If I read it right, that there have been efforts to help people get air conditioning and fans and that sort of thing, which would seem like at least a more immediate and effective response to help people sort of cool off in the short term. Can you tell us a little bit about that effort?
Yeah, of course. When they did Beat the Heat research back in 2018, the Office of Sustainability at Philadelphia, they found that there was a lack of cooling devices in people's individual homes. And so a part of that was to give out air conditioners and fans. But something that we have to remember is that not everyone has the money to pay for the increased utility bills of running those devices. And so you can see again how there are certain groups, people of low income, who are experiencing heat that they cannot find relief from, even if they may have the devices, even if they may have the want, the need. So it's just one of those things that we always have to think about. And it's not about, giving more to one person or another. It's about equity, you know, helping everyone get to that same playing field and helping them stay healthy.
Yeah. And Kurt, even as we do that, as we increase our air conditioning use, regardless of where we live, that has long-term consequences too for the environment, correct?
Well, long-term and short-term. I mean, certainly when you're increasing energy load and you've got fossil fuels still in your energy mix, you're going to increase the challenge around air pollution and the overall climate response. But there's even a shorter-term issue here, which is that, you know, air conditioning, or at least the current way we do air conditioning, exhausts heat into the environment. And so unhoused populations, outdoor workers, they're going to experience higher temperatures because of the running of air conditioning. Now, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be providing low-cost air conditioning or cooling services to all people. It just means that we need to be thinking about this problem in an integrated way that recognizes that as a particular challenge. So, for example, it may be that we increase the number of air conditioners into heat-exposed neighborhoods, but we crack down on the waste of energy in other sectors, which is a real challenge. So I think it's not so much saying we shouldn't do it. It's more to say, let's think about this in a comprehensive way. And in fact, with heat, what we see is a lot of the solutions we're talking about are not either or. They're both and they complement each other. They're mutually beneficial to each other. So I think that's really the key, I think, to a good execution is to think about these in a systems way and address the broader challenge.
Our guests in the studio are nodding right along with you as you're talking, Kurt. Ivana, what did you want to say?
Yeah, I'm loving what I'm hearing from you, Kurt. And I'd also like to bring up the social component, because even if we're providing people with air conditioners and fans, it's keeping them in their homes to avoid the extreme heat of outdoors. So how does that affect neighborhoods and their ability to know one another and then advocate for themselves to say, we are hot, we need help here? So we have to think about bringing people outdoors so they can get to know someone that they maybe live next to for 20 years. And it is about solutions now, but it's about that long-term solution that is fully rounded to encompass all of these things that concern heat.
Yeah. Speaking of long-term, one other quick point before we get back to talking about the tree project. And Kurt, I'll direct this to you. You know, Philadelphia's average summer temperature has risen about 3 degrees Fahrenheit over the last 50 years. Which doesn't sound like very much. Why is that significant?
Well, okay, so a couple things there. First of all, that's an average temperature. So that's capturing both day and night over a large area. And so what we're seeing is those changes are much more pronounced on certain times of the day and in certain neighborhoods. And so a 3 degree increase is quite significant. When you consider that the global climate impacts that we're worried about occur at about 3 degrees increase in temperature over the beginning of the industrial period, that's a very rapid rise in temperature in one place. So that's one of the issues here. And I'd say this is something we see in a lot of places, but let's just look at the extreme heat piece of it. In Philadelphia, you know, over the last, let's say, historically, 71 to 2000 or so, there were about 4 days a year that got over 100 degrees Fahrenheit, so max daytime temperature. And by the end of this century, so when the kids born today are seniors, it'll be closer to 55 days. So an increase, an 11-fold increase in the number of days that will be extremely dangerous. And so that 3 degrees of average temperature hides a pretty substantial amount of max temperature change.
Yeah. You're listening to Radio Times on WHYY, and if you're just joining us, we're talking about urban heat islands, that is, parts of cities that are so much hotter than other areas of the city, oftentimes because of a lack of trees, because of an abundance of asphalt, of black roofs, and other ingredients that combine to make one neighborhood swelter to a much greater degree than others in hot weather like what we are experiencing right now. Erica Fitchman, I want to talk again about the tree project. And you mentioned just a few minutes ago some of the health benefits of trees in terms of the particulate matter. But how do trees really help to mitigate extreme heat in neighborhoods?
That's a great question. Trees actually pull heat out and release it out into the atmosphere. So they do something called transpiration, and that can actually take the heat, bring it into the water that is flowing through the tree's body, and then emit it up into the atmosphere. So kind of move it through the system and the water cycle, in fact.
So there are a number of benefits. It seems that there's an air pollution benefit to trees, you know, evaporating water, right, and sort of sucking up water, which helps with sewer systems, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. Trees will capture stormwater as it's falling as rain, and then keep it from running into our sewer systems. So we, in Philadelphia, we have a combined sewer system, which means that when we have a storm event, our sewage mixes with our stormwater, and it all runs into the rivers where we get our drinking water from. And so planting more trees can prevent all of that water from rushing into the system and prevent the mixing of those two things.
Yeah. And Ivana, there are economic benefits, I would think, as well to having trees in terms of energy costs, that sort of thing. What kind of economic benefits can we see from having more trees in a neighborhood?
Right, so you can imagine if you have the tree and you get that shading, much like that resident spoke about her beautiful cherry tree, her baby, you're shading your home. And so if you're shading your home from the heat of the sun, you're also preventing it from heating up the air that's inside. And then we also have to think about how it affects businesses. When you have a tree outside of your business, people are more likely to stop in because why? People congregate under the tree where there's shade because they're looking for relief. You know, they stop by, they take a look. Oh, let's go inside and see what they have going on in here.
So it pays to have a tree in front of your business.
It sure does.
It sounds like. Kurt, I want to bring you in on this as well, because there was a point that Ivana made a few minutes ago about people getting outside, getting to know their neighbors, which is really difficult to do in very hot weather when there's no shade. You've obviously studied lots of vegetation initiatives like the ones that we're talking about in places all around the world. How big of a galvanizing effect can a project like this one have for a community?
I mean, it can be transformational at a community and a city level. So, you know, some of the work we're doing is really trying to identify scaled opportunities to bring the finance community in to actually do big projects to develop heat resilience. And in many of the places that that's coming together, it's being built around these sort of signature, not just park spaces, but also sort of transects through this green transects through cities that line up with where people are actually outside. And so making sure that the spaces where people are, you know, getting on public transportation or walking, what you might call the walk shed, like we have a watershed, there's also walk sheds in cities, and linking these areas of respite to each other through a very high profile, very beautiful, and in many ways can be iconic looking set of new parks and pathways. These can be linked with many other, you know, areas of respite that cities have, both built environments or, you know, fountains and things like that, to create a space where people are actually close to areas where they can stay safe during hot weather. We see cities like Paris, for example, and Phoenix are investing in this sort of larger thinking around, we don't just need more street trees, we need street trees that are connected to micro parks and large parks, and that those can actually be, you can move through your city with shade. And with the comfort of trees or other shade devices. And so, yeah, that's certainly what we're seeing cities move towards. And I think they're seeing it as much of, looking at it as much of a benefit for the population as they are to, as a sort of outward statement to the world that this is an issue that they care about and, you know, that they want to highlight.
Erica?
Yeah, I wanted to follow up and say that we actually know here in Philly, because of research that the Forest Service has done, that if we were to get to our 30% tree canopy benchmark that we are working towards, that it would save 406 deaths a year in Philadelphia. And, you know, what Kurt is saying about the interconnectedness is so, so important. And what we were saying before about people having a say in what happens in their community is also extremely important. And so knowing where people are most impacted by high heat and low tree canopy is so important. And that is how we focused the Philly Tree Plan's efforts, getting we want to support people where they need it the most in the ways that they want to be supported.
Yeah, and I just wanted to piggyback off of that and say that, you know, trees are both a short-term and a long-term investment. So we have to convince the people, bust those myths about the trees, which previously concerns were true. You know, they did bust up sidewalks, they did get into pipes, they did tangle in overhead wires. But now we're focusing on the right tree in the right place. And so you have to convince the person now that it's going to be okay, take the tree, but then that tree should be there for decades to come. So it's the now and it's the later.
Well, I think you bring up a really important point about the myths about trees, or at least, and not even myths, because it has been true of, you know, certain types of trees. So practically speaking, Erica, what types of trees are we talking about? Are these somewhat mature trees that can provide immediate shade? Is it saplings that are going to take a while to grow to provide shade? What are we looking at?
Well, you have to plant a tree and care for it to get big. There is research that shows that planting smaller trees and caring for them properly, those trees can actually establish and grow quicker than planting a really large tree would. So, of course, when we plant trees, we plant small trees that need to be cared for, and that's a really big part of the Philly Tree Plan. But in the field of urban forestry and forestry in general, we talk about planting the right tree, like Ivana said, the right tree in the right place, planted in the right way. So trees that we plant along the street have to be more resilient to the salt and the dirt and the pollution and the compaction of people walking next to them, and the stress of living in the street. Trees that are planted in the park or in someone's yard have a little bit fewer stressors. So we have different lists of trees that we will plant in different areas based on what the conditions of that spot is.
Hmm. So just by example, what might a couple of types of tree be?
Well, along the street, you have areas where you might have overhead wires, and so you would plant a shorter stature tree, maybe mm-hmm. a red bud or a hornbeam or something like that. If you have more space, you might plant an oak. In the park system, you can plant much larger trees, like an elm that can take up space. Trees that might have more surface roots that you wouldn't want around pavement, you can plant in the park system, like your maples or your zelkovas. Through the Philadelphia Parks and Rec Department and the Fairmount Park Conservancy, we have this wonderful program called the Tree Philly Yard Tree Giveaway. And through that program, we're trying to source more trees from southern areas that are going to be more resilient to the changing climate that we have here in Philadelphia.
Ivana, is there a job creation potential benefit here for people to care for all of these trees? Because you can't necessarily depend on the neighbors to take full responsibility for that.
Absolutely. And we do encourage neighbors to take part in the care of the tree, the planting of the tree, the love of the tree. And so PHS has a program called the Tree Tenders. And so what they do is they train people in basic tree care and things of that nature. And then so you can turn people who have shown interest in trees by becoming tree tenders into people who can then have maybe a part-time position where they're watering trees to fill in gaps of when the owners can do that themselves. Because as we can see from these extreme heat, you know, the trees are going to need more help, at least those first 2 years.
And that is actually, Ivana, one of the big things in the Philly Tree Plan that we've talked about is investing in people as well, and how providing establishment care to a tree, that means the care that it needs in the first few years after planting, is a low-cost, low-skill, low-training opportunity for people to get jobs to work in their communities to care for trees. And so that is one of the large recommendations of the Philly Tree Plan.
Yeah, so lots of benefits all the way around as it relates to trees. We have so much more to talk about here on Radio Times as we're talking about these urban heat islands, these areas that get so, so hot in the city. We also have a number of comments from our listeners, and we will get to your comments and questions when Radio Times comes right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moscowain. We're talking about urban heat islands. These are areas of cities that get hotter than other areas, typically because of a lack of trees, because of a lot of asphalt, black rooftops, and so forth. And of course, in the kind of weather that we are experiencing now, the heat can just become absolutely unbearable. In fact, there are studies that show that just in Philadelphia, there are some neighborhoods that can get up to 22 degrees hotter than other neighborhoods that are just a few miles away. So there are efforts underway to plant more trees, to address other ways, you know, addressing asphalt, addressing rooftops, figuring out ways to cool down some of the hottest neighborhoods in the city. But this is an effort that is going on across the country and indeed around the world as we face the effects of climate change. So our guests for this hour are Ivana Gonzalez, who is Community Outreach Coordinator at Esperanza. She's in charge of their Green Initiative. Erica Smith-Fitchman is Community Forestry Manager at Philadelphia Parks and Recreation. She is the project lead of the Philly Tree Plan. And Kurt Schickman is Director of Extreme Heat Initiatives at the Adrian Arsht Rockefeller Foundation Resilience Center. We have lots of comments and questions from our listeners, so let me go to some of those now. We have an email here from Sonia, who says, Powelton Village and surrounding neighborhoods are experiencing tremendous development, primarily university-style housing/apartment buildings. Many of these new rental properties neglect to replant previously standing street trees. Are there policies for tree planting for development? So that's one question. And I also want to read this comment from Rick, who says, in the highly impacted neighborhoods, the properties are rentals. So you have landlords holding a dozen properties. They're not going to invest in air conditioning. Erica, to you about the policies and how the city is approaching these issues related to landlords and developers.
Absolutely. So the Philly Tree Plan has a lot of recommendations for how to improve our policy and our zoning code to encourage tree planting and to encourage replacement of trees that are removed during development. In fact, recently, Councilmember Gilmore Richardson sponsored a bill that does a lot of that to increase the requirements for how many trees are required to be planted on developments, even including a new requirement for yard trees that have to be planted in a development. And so there is a lot of work to be done to improve the way that we encourage developers to care for the green spaces around their developments. And we have been making some progress already on that.
Yeah. An email from Douglas says, we need to take care of the trees we already have. It takes the city 2 years after notification that a tree needs to be cut down or trimmed. It's crazy because tree limbs are falling down on cars as well as on people. So a problem that needs to be addressed. Kurt, I want to bring you in here as well to just talk about, you know, the importance as we talk about these trees and having policies and having protections that are built in legislatively for these kinds of vegetation projects. What can you share from your experience working with other cities?
Well, I'm really glad you asked that because I actually think that gets to the question about renters versus people that own the houses. And that's really where the need for policy and regulation is the most acute. And so what we are seeing is, you know, just to speak to that, and I'll jump over to the trees real quick. You know, we're seeing, you know, a couple states and certainly some cities looking at replicating what the requirements we have for units to have access to heating to also have access to cooling and creating that requirement for a landlord to provide at least the equipment that would allow a house to maintain a certain temperature. It already exists for heating, as I mentioned. It can also exist for cooling. So there's a lot of things we can do with policy to address what the market won't address for us. Yeah. In terms of trees, I think what we're seeing here are, I can say, for example, in Melbourne, Australia, it's how do we, knowing that some trees may get cut down, how do we create a compelling reason or a penalty for doing that, so that that can then be used to plant other trees? And so it should be done by the developer, and they should be, in many ways, there are requirements that would require them to do that. But there may be also fees up front in the planting process that if trees are going to be taken off the property, particularly old growth trees that are providing shade, that there is some financial cost for doing that that recognizes the value of that tree and that can be then used to enhance tree planting efforts in that area or even in other parts of the city.
Yeah. Erica?
Yeah, and thanks for bringing that up, Kurt, because the most recent policy that was sponsored does, in fact, do that and tries to get at that very problem where you're removing something that is of benefit to the community. There should be a monetary cost involved with that. There should be a consequence to doing something like that. And so there are fees that are included in the most recent policy right here in Philadelphia.
Yeah. Email here from Needy, who says, can you comment on the mental health benefits of having trees around? I believe there have been studies done on the health benefits of being exposed to greenery and nature. Ivana, what do you say about the mental health benefits?
Mental health, trees got it all. So it is known that when you're around trees, your blood pressure goes down, your happy hormones go up, your stress hormones go down. There's just so many things that, you know, you breathe more deeply. The air that you're breathing, like Erica was mentioning earlier, is cleaner because of those depolluting processes that the tree has. It's just, there's too many things to name that trees can do for you.
No downside.
Can I add to that?
Sure, Kurt.
I think the fact that trees provide shade and cool in many different ways also benefits mental health, because we see that heat is very closely tied to increased negative mental health outcomes for people. And we also know that in many cases, you know, when you're dealing with the disease of addiction and the treatment of that disease, that can also put you at a greater risk from high heat. And so trees by themselves are a wonderful mental health stimulant, but they also, by reducing heat, further that benefit.
Erica?
Absolutely. And I actually wanted to go back to something that you mentioned from one of the emails about taking care of the trees that we have. We know that from a recent U.S. Forest Service study that the greatest source of new tree canopy in the city is the growth of existing trees. It's trees that exist now getting bigger, providing more canopy. And so taking care of the trees we have right now is a huge emphasis that we need to have moving into the future. And having trees that are public trees that are taken care of properly is a crucial trust building exercise in communities where people are not as willing to have a new tree in front of their home because of some of the things that Ivana was mentioning before. So it can seem like a huge burden to people to add a tree to their property or the existing trees the way that they're taken care of now. And so creating systems and increasing funding to care for the existing trees is not only crucial to the health of the urban canopy, but also to trust building with communities to accept trees that might not accept them in the past.
Yeah. Ivana?
Yeah, and just to bring up that sort of job creation component, it's that if we have a group that we identify is interested in trees, they become a tree tender. Maybe then they get a job working to water those trees. Maybe later on they start to care for the mature tree canopy that we have through pruning, through things of that nature, maybe getting certified as arborists. You know, it could really become a pipeline to a career that's really good for them and good for the neighborhood.
Yeah. So, Kurt, Jerry asks the question, trees can't be the only solution to cooling. What other cooling technologies are cities trying? Talk a little bit about, in your experience, what some of the other measures are that have been successful.
Sure. So let's look at the built environment itself, so our buildings and our pavements. You've mentioned cool roofs a number of times. That can be, you know, going from a light or from a dark surface to a light surface. There are also technologies that are maybe more applicable on a your typical steep slope roof that you might have in your residential house. That while the shingle looks dark, is actually reflecting a lot of the sun's energy and providing cooling benefit. The same technology works for walls, and so we can have, you know, light colored or dark but reflective walls that are substantially improving the thermal comfort of buildings, making them cooler inside, reducing the energy load there. So those are two on the building side. I would also say, you know, just like a well-placed tree can provide shade. When I was growing up, we had the sort of metal awnings over our exterior of our windows. That additional shade can also benefit, especially as we're waiting for trees to grow to their full shade potential. When we get into pavements, we're also seeing a real revolution in terms of what can be done on pavements to make them part of the solution and not a part of the problem. And that is the same kind of idea that we've talked about here, where I think Erica mentioned the permeability of surfaces. Well, we can make pavements permeable too, and that can help with stormwater mitigation, stormwater runoff. It can help with providing cooling by evaporating the water that's in that surface. And it also cools a little faster because it's less massive and it has less weight, so it gives off its heat faster. So there's less of an impact at night. Just like we have cool roofs, we also can have roads that are lighter in color. So even going from if your road was the color of your typical sidewalk, we would see substantial benefits in terms of temperature reduction. And this is, I think, particularly important as we're thinking about how we address the challenge in communities that have been overbuilt and overpaved. Because while I completely agree that trees are the long-term solution in those neighborhoods, if it takes 5 to 10 years for that solution to reach its full potential, we have problems today that we need to address. And so pairing a tree program with a cool pavement type program helps address the challenge today, while our sort of long-term and really important solutions can mature into what they'll be. So there's quite a lot that can be done there on that piece. And then, like I said, I think it's also changing the way we think about heat. We often talk about our success in terms of a heat policy or heat work in terms of number of trees or number of cool roofs and temperature reductions. And there's all different kinds of complicated ways we can do that. But at the end of the day, what really matters is the impact it has on people. And so starting to think about our activities in terms of how they're going to benefit people's health, reduce mortality, reduce visits to the emergency room or to hospitals. These are the types of things that when we start thinking in that way, there's a number, an incredible number of solutions that we'll come up with, some of which are technological, some of which are behavioral, some of which come right out of the community, that will help together address this challenge. And we can measure that progress through human health. And it even gets into how we prepare and warn about our heat waves. Tying that to the human health outcome of weather that we see coming is a really important way for us to raise the awareness and a likelihood that people will act to prepare themselves and to check on their neighbors, families, and friends.
And just as a follow-up to that, Kurt, there's a question here from Al who says, shouldn't parking lots and roofs that are now heat magnets be shaded by solar panels to turn the solar energy into electricity for use to reduce urban heat?
Yeah, so again, it's a both-and situation here. So those panels are excellent for providing shade. Under certain conditions, they can be hot, so they have to be put in place properly. But if that's done, that shade is critical. But just like with roofs, solar panels won't cover the entire space typically. And so pairing it with some of these other technologies we've talked about will together provide a better benefit than just one solution for each place. But it really is the sort of buffet that we can draw from to address heat is the same everywhere. But what we decide to put on our plate will actually vary by community and what that community may need.
And Erica, can you speak to what we're doing specifically in Philadelphia beyond the tree project, as Kurt has been talking about, cooler pavements and roofs and that sort of thing? What else are we doing here to address the issue?
That's a great question. I mean, working for the city, I do work with many other departments who are finding different solutions to these problems. Our water department here in the city has an amazing program called the Green City Clean Waters Program, and that is a stormwater program, but it is focused on installing green infrastructure. So that's trees, that's rain gardens, that's all sorts of green things that can assist with the stormwater problem. Our Office of Sustainability has a huge energy initiative to reduce the amount of energy that our city buildings are taking up and other buildings across the city. Our Office of Transportation Infrastructure and Sustainability, OTIS, has plans in place based on the infrastructure bill that went through the federal government to explore cool pavement, like Kurt was talking about. So there are a number of other initiatives that other parts of the city are exploring to deal with the issue of high heat.
Yeah, Ivana, we sometimes hear about crime rates increasing in particularly hot weather. Is there a connection to be made there, first of all, and is that potentially another side effect of living in an urban heat island?
Absolutely. So when we know that there's trees there, so one of the things that we have to do is raise the tree line. So if there are mature trees, that we're raising their branches so that there's clear sight lines, so that you can see, oh, there's danger there, or maybe there's a situation that I need to avoid. And so because trees have these mental health well-being aspects and also the social well-being aspect where people will commune under trees, you have more eyes on the street, you have more people looking around, and then you have people who are more likely to commit crimes saying, I'm not going to go and do this thing there because there's a lot of people out on their block who can see me doing things.
Yeah. Erica?
Yeah, thanks, Ivana. And there also is research from the Forest Service and from the University of Pennsylvania that shows here in Philadelphia the impacts of green space on crime adjacent to it. It's wonderful research from the Urban Health Lab at the University of Pennsylvania.
Yeah. In our last moment here, Kurt, I just want to have you sort of reiterate. I mean, we think it's hot now, but we know that climate scientists have been warning us for a long time that it's only going to get worse unless we do something drastic. In 30 seconds, tell me, how hot could our cities get if we don't take these kinds of steps?
Well, I mean, every city's going to be different, but I can say that with pretty good comfort that the conditions we have now will not at all reflect what our children will be living through or what the next generation will be living through. And so we need more activity, but we also need more groups like Esperanza doing what they're doing to really engage the community. So these changes we make are persistent over time and not just things we do right away and to get out there, but to really connect with the community to make these things a part of the way we live going forward in our new climate reality.
Yeah. Our guests have been Ivana Gonzalez, Erica Smith-Fitchman, and Kurt Schickman. Many thanks to all of you for being with us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our producers are Debbie Bilder and Paige Murray-Bessler. Our engineer today was Diana Martinez. And I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moscowane. You're listening to Radio Times on WHYY.